So welcome everybody, especially welcome those who have not been here before, anyone who's not been here for a while. And while I'm at it, all of you who come regularly. How was your meditation? Anybody want to say what actually happened in your meditation? Let us in on what it was like on the inner. If you want to, you can do that. Yeah, I'd like that. You mean your thoughts? Yeah. Anybody else experience that? Thoughts rolling? They have a mind of their own, huh? The cats, yes, they're into it. Being cats, yeah. The meditation, in a way, is fundamentally about not excluding anything. Sometimes our conception of meditation is a certain state, like we're getting quiet or getting peaceful or getting into a space of feeling a deeper sort of quietness or loving. Peacefulness, these kinds of things. Those are states, right? And all states come and go. Meditation isn't about a state. It's not about getting a state, keeping a state. You can't keep any states. No states last. Which is another way of saying no experiences last. So, in a way, the function of the meditation is to provide us with an opportunity to become truly undefended. It's like becoming a baby again. I talked last week about sort of the interface between therapy or therapeutic process and meditation, and one of the themes was this theme of the possibility of becoming undefended. So if you really look at what meditation can do, what it is, it's a vehicle. It's a technology in a way for becoming undefended, for becoming open. And that's what relationships are about too. When relationships are really allowed to work, whether it's a therapeutic relationship, an intimate relationship with a friend, an intimate relationship with a partner, you know, a spouse. And when families work, when family systems work, they work to help people really open to themselves and to one another. And in a way, that's what our society could do. Obviously, it's quite complicated when you take it to a societal, cultural level, this possibility of openness. Because the openness that we're asked to consider through a tragedy like what happened in Arizona, it's difficult. And then look at how people have different ways of being open. Open to this, or open to that. And oftentimes what's happening is people are open through their view of openness. This is what openness is. And then somebody else has a different view of openness. Okay, what I'm talking about is an openness that isn't based on a view. And what would that be like? To not have a view or a concept or a preconceived idea of openness. It's like having one's eyes open for the very first time. We don't remember this. What was it like to have the eyes open for the very first time? To have never seen before and suddenly there's seeing. To never heard before, suddenly there's hearing. To never felt before, but suddenly there's feeling. This is a bit about what it's like to wake up to what we really are, to our real nature. It's the liberation from bias. It's the liberation from views about what meditation is. It's even the liberation of views about what a human being is. It's the liberation of view. So even to talk about openness without view is difficult because the mind is so accustomed to looking at life through view. What is it that sees that? What is it that sees the mind that has views? I like to use the term awareness for that. Awareness can see the mind's views. And all views are conditioned. So as we sit, or as we meditate in some form, and most of us need a formal way about this, we're not so fortunate or lucky to just be walking through the course of our life and to be able to truly see things as they are, without filtration, without bias or prejudice. Most of us need a specific training or format or environment to assist us. And sometimes we need the company or the guidance of other people. Because left to our own devices, left to our own sort of proclivities, we're going to follow habits. We're going to follow tendencies. And there's plenty of tendencies and habits that have kind of found their way, been conditioned into us. It's hard, maybe even impossible in a way, to see how all that happens. To see how all that happens would be to see truly what karma is. To really see how this has become how it is right now. Yeah, to see that really clearly would be like to see karma clearly. And if you could see karma clearly, meaning if you could see how things happen clearly, you could see through that. Because when you can see something clearly, whatever it is, like when you can see fear clearly, what happens spontaneously as you see something clearly is the possibility arises to see through that. What I'm talking about now is to see that all of your views, all of the conditioning, all of the tendencies, all of the habits, anything and everything that you ever thought to be the truth, to be what is truly real, is a view. It's a filter. Nothing wrong, in essence, but it's an obscuration. So as we sit, and let's say, as Saranji's saying, the mind is doing this, because that's what it's doing. And if it could be allowed to do what it needs to do and not interfered with, can't say how long it takes, but what it would do is it would unwind itself. That song, metaphor, yeah, would end. It's one thing to see how things come into being. It's another thing to see how they dissolve. So in the Tibetan tradition, they have a teaching, and the teaching is entitled, I can't speak Tibetan, so I can't quote it in the Tibetan, so I'll do the English, the self-liberation of suffering. Consider that. Suffering is a gift. To suffer is a gift. It's part of the human condition. However, whenever, in whatever form or shape it arises, physical, emotional, mental, relational, it's a gift. It's a gift that says, if we don't pull back, look here, look clearly. Don't flinch if you can pull it off. If you see suffering clearly, you see that it self-liberates. It liberates itself. That you, so to speak, don't do that. That's the Dharma. If you want to see the Dharma, in most cases, you need to pause from what it is that you think your life is about and where it is you think you're going and what it is you're supposed to be doing and what you've been told to do and what you're trying to do and what you're not trying to do. You need to pause. If you can find the pause button, you're very close to the stop button. Have you ever noticed that? On those machinery things? This thing doesn't have, actually it does. There's a pause button on there somewhere. The pause button is often next to the stop button. If you can find the pause button, you're close to the stop button. When I say the stop button, I don't mean everything stops, thoughts stop, your breathing stops, feeling stops. No. What happens in the stop button is that there's no running away anymore. There's no running away anymore, and there's no grasping on. There's no moving towards nor away from what's presenting itself. That's meditation. That's meditation, is that possibility of stopping. The Dharma is always, when I say the Dharma, I mean the truth of the way things are. And the truth of the way things are includes the truth that freedom is already here. It's inherent, it's intrinsic, it's the birthright, it's the fundamental birthright of humans. The human might think the birthright is to be born. Actually, the birthright is to wake up to what you really are. Now, to say that, what are we really? Actually, what we are really, to try to put words to it, is we're walking, talking, breathing, thinking, feeling mysteries. We're a mystery. We're actually unfathomable in our essence. And when I say essence, I don't mean that there's some essence as a thing that you can kind of put your finger on and find as an experience. When I use the word essence, I don't mean an experience. I don't mean a feeling. I don't mean a thought. I don't mean a perception. I don't mean a view. I don't mean a belief. I don't mean a memory. I don't mean a projection. I don't mean any of that. What is mystery? That's why the original meditators on our planet were called mystics. Because the mystic was one who was in touch with, and you might say, in love with, braided with, the mystery. Again, these words are just pointing. To see what they point at is what's important, not the word. What's the word pointing at? Let's take the example of love. Love's a mystery, how it works, how it hurts, how it soothes, how it dissolves things, how it can dissolve fear and anger and judgment, prejudice, defensiveness, and awareness. Awareness is by nature loving. That's its expression. Busy. Wouldn't it be easy if it was just so clear? Does the cat know it's a cat? Does the moon know it's the moon? Does the sun know it's the sun? No, it's free from self-identity. Free from self-absorption, free from self-fixation. It's fluid in its nature. We are too. Even when we think we're not. It's that quote from Goethe that's so good. He says, I want to be with those who know secret things or else alone. I want to unfold. I don't want to stay folded anywhere because where I am folded, there I am a lie. What he's saying is, those kinks, those folds, those creases, those so-called blockages, tensions, are there to unfold. And where I am folded, I'm not yet quite fully in the truth. That's one way of saying it. It's a dualistic teachings he's giving there. Because the fold itself is the truth too. Lies are the truth in that they're lies. The truth of the lie. Yeah? So everything is telling the truth, including what we consider to be the non-truths or lies. That's one way to consider the Dharma. All-inclusive, nothing outside. No center, yeah? No fixed center, no essence that you can put your finger on. Why can't you put your finger on the essence of what we are? Because what we are is without center. It's centerless. That's its center. The centerlessness is also its circumference. What am I saying? The center is everywhere. The circumference is everywhere. That's another way of saying no boundary. So the meditation gives us, when it opens, because that's what meditation is, it's an ever-opening, you might call it, process. But that's, again, to put it in time. The goal is to realize there is no goal. When there is no goal, then there can be a falling away of clinging. An investment in something different. When there's a falling away of investment in something different, then what's here can sing. It doesn't need to be understood. It doesn't need to be figured out. It doesn't need to change, as we talked about last week. Yeah? Freedom from need is the freedom from the fixation on needing things to be different or change. As much as change feels wonderful, especially if you're experiencing at times what seems to be the opposite of change, which is this is not changing, this is hanging around, this is difficult, and then that begins to open up and change, you go, and you feel freer because it's changing. But when nothing needs to change, when we're not fixated on things needing to change, and that opens up the possibility that things can be seen more clearly as they are. They will change. They don't need to change. See that? Very, very important. So the formal meditation, sitting, let's say, sitting meditation, sets up a possibility that we begin to see that awareness is present here through and in every activity. And that the purpose of the activities are to be fully in the activities. And things still get done. It's the most enjoyable way to get things done is to be fully in what one's doing. And you can experiment with this and test it for yourself with any activity. What distracts us, because we're distractible human beings, we share this not only transient nature here, this is not lasting, this is ephemeral. And sometimes in life it feels like everything kind of gets funneled down into, seems like a series of moments. So much of your life just kind of comes down through this large funnel and goes right through the apex, and then boom, it's over. Like a big experience, we could call a big experience, like being at a birth, being at a wedding, being with a being as they die, as they pass. What's a big experience? Well, what Carl Jung called the big dream. What's the big dream? The big dream is a dream where the archetypes and the collective unconsciousness flows through a so-called individual being's mind. And the dream is epic. It shows a proportion, it shows a dimension, it shows a vista that feels very different than my personal dream world all of a sudden something bigger goes, poof. And so one says, no, there, that, now that stood out. Something happened there. It seemed different. All that really happened there was that the aperture or the lens of seeing opened. And it can open, when I say open, it doesn't necessarily mean this. Sometimes it opens when you get, and you actually look at a grain of sand, and that's the only thing that's happening. There's a sound that appears, it could be a bird singing, that's the only thing that's happening. There's a teacher that's quite popular these days, he's based in California mostly, his name is Adyashanti. Adyashanti describes his awakening in some of his teachings. And he describes just hearing the sound without anything else happening. It's called in Buddhism bare attention. And if you want to, you can probably go online and find this specific teaching. Because online now, you can, if you know how to find it, you can find incredible truths right there. But it's kind of like you can't have that unless you're supposed to, or you're ready. It's to be given at the right time. It's like when we're ready, as the teachings have said for so long, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. My mind goes, oh, that means this, 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 and not this, this, this. The teacher is always appearing as what is happening. It's ongoing, it's continuous. The only thing that says something other than that's going on is my mind, my view, my idea of the teacher and the student, the readiness for the meeting. This is a little bit disappointing to the mind that is fixated on sensationalism. Sensationalism will keep happening because we're sensory beings. Woo! Woo! Moving, moving, moving. It keeps moving. But what happens is the mind lets go of making any bit of it more important or less important than any other bit. And at first that can feel disappointing because all of a sudden that which was invested in as this is better somehow loses its pedestal. Do you follow what I'm saying? It's a little disturbing. Just like the depression that sometimes comes for people when they realize liberation is not a state. It's not an experience that you have. It's an awakening or realization where you disappear. And I don't mean you die, physically die, but the holding, the view, all of that sort of scaffolding that we've considered to be the truth or reality or what is familiar stops. And those so-called epiphanies of life funneling into a moment are saying, in a way, very poignantly, see what's really happening here. What's really happening here all the time is constantly changing. Is unpossessable because it's constantly changing. So it cannot be owned. And any attempt to own it, keep it, have it, make it mine, the more I make it mine, try to make it mine, keep it, hold it, the more it shows itself as, you can't do that. I won't let you do that. You can't keep me. And this is true right across the board. try to keep a certain experience, try to keep a person a certain way, try to keep anything fixated. Life won't let it happen. The Dharma won't let it happen. So the message comes through, let go. Meditation is a technology that offers us that ongoingly. Where are you holding? You can let go. Because as Goethe said, where you're holding, there you're still, in a way, alive. There's aliveness there, but it's coagulated. So this area, yeah, the heart, we often think of this as a place where when it opens, then we feel very loving. We feel available to be loved, and we feel available to love. When this really opens, that's part of it, but when this really opens, it's about the openness and the liberation from view. It's been said, you can check this out, that our true being is in here. I'm not sure about this. That our true being is in here. And then a whole teaching is given about where it is in here. And there's actually a physical anatomical location for it. In certain parts of the spiritual teachings out of India, it's called the psychic being. Sometimes the word soul is used. If you go over into Buddhism, it says there is no soul. There is no enduring essence. And so the mind can get confused. Like, what are we doing really when we meditate? Are we looking to find something that lasts? That doesn't make sense if the teaching seems to keep saying nothing lasts. Do I have many lives or just this one? Will I get another chance if I blow this one? If I don't really let myself open now, will I get another chance later? Should I just postpone? Should I take it easy? Maybe I'll just have a nap. Does it matter what I eat? What matters? And we begin to realize deeply that we can't really take anybody else's experience as our guide. That we have to find out for ourselves. In a way, we have to go it alone. Even when someone who we trust deeply is sitting right beside us, we are alone together. Nothing can substitute for direct experiential insight. And the good news about that is it dissipates sometimes the concern in the mind about, am I going the right way? Because doubt is a deep, deep, subtle, challenging force in the mind. To doubt teachings, to doubt teachers, to doubt oneself, doubt my capacity. Am I going the right way? How will I know? So what some people do is they abdicate. Is that the right word? That's not the right word.
Abdicate?
Abdicate, yeah. They abdicate that responsibility, that agency, and they ask somebody else to take over for them. This already happened to us with our caregivers before we could say, hey, wait a minute, I'm not sure about you, or yeah, I choose you. Will you take care of me? No, it just happened. If you're really lucky, fortunate, you find somebody who really knows what you need. They know what you need beyond what you can recognize. And they say, here. And this kind of relationship exists. But for the majority of us, we're a little bit out at sea. Not without a raft, But we need to know where the raft is and how it works and what it can do and what it can't do. What is the raft? And since the raft could be meditation. Could be the way in which meditation works, where you begin to trust what you're actually able to directly see yourself. And you begin to see through some of the patterns and the conditionings in your brain mind. And you begin to trust something as simple as your ability to see, hear, smell, taste, touch, and the way those sense experiences connect you to this world. That's an immediacy that softens the tendency to be looking for something somewhere else. You ever noticed how strongly the mind can be conditioned to be looking for something somewhere else? Something better, something different. It builds into expectation, it builds into hope, and it also builds into fear that what we're hoping for or expecting or wanting might not happen. Because if it hasn't happened yet, it might not happen, the mind can say. And so we're still looking. But if we stop looking, then in a way we've stopped meditating. If we've stopped being interested in the mystery, if we become, in a way, heedless, then all we end up living in is habit. Now, we might have very healthy habits. We might eat well, sleep well, listen to certain biorhythms that guide us pretty well, and we live pretty peaceful and harmonious. But if you do that for a while, what you end up feeling is that you're in a part of the song, a loop in the record. It feels pretty good, but you're just going around in circles. You're just going around in circles, and it can be very comfortable and entrancing and seductive. Body's okay, mind's okay, life's okay, things are in place. And so you actually kind of go into a little bit of a trance or sleep, and your eyes are open. Everything's still going along. Feels good. Usually, some element of life's gift as change or suffering will pop into that part of the record and say, enough, here's this. And wake us up again from that loop, called a nested loop. So awakening, in essence, is not an experience. This is very difficult for our minds because our minds are about experience. Seeing clearly is not really an experience. So just notice how the quietness doesn't need to be figured out. Just rest into the quietness for a moment here, if you'd like. Notice how it doesn't need to be figured out. Doesn't need to be analyzed. Doesn't need to be held on to. Doesn't need to be resisted. It doesn't need anything. It just is. And as that quietness, in a sense of it maybe out there, as that quietness is allowed through non-defensiveness to, in a sense, penetrate, that's just one way to put it, because it can seem like it's coming in, but in another sense it's coming out. It's being liberated. Our true nature is totally, completely, uncomplicated, quiet, and full. So that quietness is, in a way, the mystery. It's one of the easiest ways for the human being to not comprehend, but you might say resonate with the mystery, is to just simply let go into quietness. Let go into silence, let go into stillness. So this same teacher, Adyashanti, he uses the teaching for his meditation as letting everything be as it is. Right? Wonderful teaching. The meditation is about letting everything be as it is. And silence, stillness, is always letting everything be as it is, isn't it? And if you resonate with that, if you align to that silence and stillness, then it's a very, you might say, efficient way to begin to see the possibility of letting everything be as it is. And when everything is allowed to be as it is, then the tendency to hold view, idea, concept about anything, freedom, anything, yourself as an individual, as a body, can dissipate. Very simple. And it's not just a few in our history of spiritual teachings that have said, if you want to see the truth, simply be quiet. Can you be quiet? So, what's on your mind? Thoughts, ideas, questions? Anything.
You mentioned to the fellow I've taken some Qigong with that I was having trouble sleeping. And I mentioned that I also was doing a little meditation sometimes before going to bed, and his response included, don't do the meditation, that might be making it worse. I haven't talked to him, so I don't know what he imagines that means.